Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Up the Poshcast. We are recording a weekend where Peterborough United didn't play. So we're going to rack our brains and go back to midweek when Posh won in the Virtue Trophy over Cheltenham 3-2, continuing our unbeaten record in the competition, which was nice to see. Tonight, we've got Ashley, we've got Dale, we've got Lodge, Charlie, Max, and myself, John. So almost a full house bar Harry. First things first, Ash, talk us through the Cheltenham game and what you can remember 4 days on from the event.
Unconvincing, really. It's just a sign of what I think is things to come, really. Like not being able to get going in the first half. Fergie's admitted that was his fault. And then second half, sort of obviously getting the goals that we needed to go through. But it really didn't feel like we were going to get anywhere, and ultimately could we have done with just getting ourselves out of the competition there to now focus on the league, because it's a massive month, isn't it, February, and it's probably going to be our only win. And actually I'm not sure that it's the win that the players deserve, because I saw nothing against Wigan a couple of weeks before that implied that we were going to get results in. Some sloppy goals to concede, obviously a worldie as well. But, you know, I think that Fergie sort of made it clear that I think that we're going to start seeing a bit more of Jed Steer at this time of the year, which I'm not against. I think that it has its value in a sense. Like, it definitely, you could hear him more at the back, which was a positive. But ultimately, I still have some concerns over his actual goalkeeping ability. And do we need a communicator at the back at this time of the year when we have Sam Hughes in defence?
I think I'm just a bit bored of us playing so preserved, and I think that's the main thing, is that it's so boring every week to watch us just defend all the time, and it's I don't know where you really go from it, really, in terms of sort of trying to get back into an attacking rhythm. This team's completely shot for confidence. I don't really know where we're going to go with it. Our attackers aren't good enough. Our defence probably isn't good enough, despite the January signings that we've made. I still don't think our defence is League One standard. Our attack isn't League One standard. And really what we're relying on is the man behind me to come back and get us the shit tip that we're in. And that's the main thing, really, is we're all sort of just waiting for Pocky to come back and in hopes that the magic we saw at the start of the season, where, you know, we were beating Cambridge and Blackpool 5 and 6-1 respectively, you know, that we can replicate those performances on home soil with sort of him playing that role that he plays so well, which is score a lot of goals and hopefully we can concede less. And he's really the player that helped us do that. And at the start of the season, you know, I sort of thought, you know, well, we've got players like Ricky still and Joel Randall at the start and Archie and Hector, and we've still got this spine. And then all of a sudden, Poku's gone and everything's fallen apart. Obviously, during his injury, everything just fell apart. We had no attacking sort of like thought process at all. The tactic looked poor. And really, I didn't think we'd be such a one-man team. I mean, last season, I wouldn't have told you that Pocky was better than Mason Clark, for example. And here we are, we're just a one-man band again. And last season, you know, we probably weren't a one-man band, but this season we really are. And hopefully his injury doesn't knock him too much, because I think we're really, really relying on that man to come back and save us.
Well, do you know what? It is quite a long time, and you all know that my memory is fucking amazing. So I've had to like sort of like try and recap what actually happened the other night. But the first half was awful. As we've already alluded to, it was an absolute awful shit show sort of system. It wasn't working. Everything was going against us. And, you know, Cheltenham done what they needed to do. They took the lead. as Ash said, a fucking cracking goal. And if anybody didn't applaud that, then, well, you're not really into football. Really, really good goal. Having said that, it could have been prevented from a couple of, you know, shy tackles, I think it's fair to say. But then in the second half, we come out and we definitely look like a better team. There were some standout performances for me. I thought Mothersill actually played quite well. I thought Harley Mills done very well, even with his quadruple fucking header. So I think you've got to take some of the positives out of it. There was some good, and as I say, Jed was steady. Wallin, I thought, was quite good. Not quite outstanding, but he was quite good. But then you had some poor performances. I'm disappointed by Brian Brady. And also Kieran Hayes didn't have their best games. But, you know, we got the win. I was happy to get the win. And, no game this weekend. So hopefully there's been a bit of time to be able to work on a better system, get the best out of players, ready to go on Tuesday. So I can't really say too much about the game apart from second half was better than first, and a win is a win, even though it was against a, I suppose, steady. They look quite good second division team, but we still should have battered them.
Yeah, I think that probably the one thing that I did sort of want to sort of touch on is how bad the first half was tactically. But then the second half actually felt a little bit exciting, I would say. Like, the 4-2-4 definitely worked. And I think that's probably something that I would like to see going forwards. Thought that Mills, Dornelli were really good. Obviously, Mills took the plaudits for four headers on the bounce, but there was lots of balls that Cheltenham tried to play over the top of Dornelli, and Dornelli won a lot of headers down at right back. And then as well, the centre-backs, it felt more like that exciting posh, which when you have Sam Hughes and have Johnston and Teo Adunin, it doesn't feel like that exciting posh. And I think I'm a little bit torn as to what I want, because I don't want to concede goals every game. But actually, if conceding goals means that we score goals, then I definitely know what I would prefer.
Yeah, fully with you on that, Ash. I thought Fergie's tactics were just mental in the first half. He seems like a manager really searching for something at the minute, and I'm not sure he's going about it in the right way. To basically stick 10 men behind the ball at home to Cheltenham Town is just so anti-Fergie, and I just don't understand why he thought that was the appropriate way to go for that fixture. Thankfully, he corrected things, and in the second half, it was a lot better, and I just hope that is the point where he thinks, let's just go back to what I know and coach attacking football. A couple of performances I wanted to single out, I guess. One in a negative way, which was George Nevitt. I thought, look, I quite like George Nevitt. I think for an 18-year-old, he's been overplayed in our team, but he needs to get stronger. He needs to bulk out. His lack of pace is pretty alarming at this point, but also his lack of physicality is not great. And at the minute, he looks really low on confidence and can't even seem to pass his way out of the defence at the minute, which is one of his key strengths. And I still have hope that there's a player in there, because I do think technically he's excellent, but we sort of built him up as being the next Ronnie Edwards, didn't we, in the early parts of the season. I think he is a long, long way off being Ronnie Edwards at the minute, and it may be the case that he needs to go out on loan. He needs to toughen up before we sort of put him in anywhere near sort of a regular place, because he does look some way off the level at the minute. And the other one I did want to credit is just Harley Mills. I think since he's come back on loan, he's done well whenever he's really been given an opportunity. And I thought he did very well again in the second half when he came on. Look, Mills still has some work to do defensively, but technically he's a good player. And for his age of 19, I genuinely see a lot of positives that come with him. I don't know if he's ever going to be an amazing player for Posh. I don't know if he's going to be the next Harrison Burrows. I haven't seen enough of him to start making sort of claims like that, but I have seen enough that gives me a lot of encouragement about him in the future. And I thought his performance on the night was very, very good. And he was a key reason why we managed to turn that around. So I'm not opposed to considering him as sort of a first team option for next season, because I think he's done enough when he's been given enough chances. And I think as a backup option next season, he might well be an option.
Yeah, the Cheltenham game was a bit of a slog to watch, wasn't it? Definitely the first half was rubbish. I think I want to give Fergie the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if he was trying to experiment a little bit. We don't normally play five at the back at home, but for whatever reason, he set up with five. I don't know if the unavailable defenders played into his mind a little bit there. I think we had five unavailable for that game. And then, yeah, the second half, he went with a 4-2-4, which is something we've not seen before. So I'm hoping what he's done is he's learned from it. He's learned what works. He's learned what doesn't. And I hope that from that game, like you've already said, John, I hope he moves on now. I hope he knows what he's good at. I hope he knows what our strengths are. And I hope he focuses on that going on for the rest of the season. The one player I want to talk about is Hector Kyprianou, who is someone that I've critiqued over the last few weeks, especially over the January transfer window, where there's probably been a slight unsettlement on his behalf. He was much improved, very present around the pitch. He didn't make any obvious mistakes in possession. And my favourite thing about what he did on Wednesday night, which is something he did a lot last season, was getting into the box. There's been plenty of times this season where we haven't got enough bodies into the box and we're delivering the balls, but there's no one there to finish them. And I mean, he got his goal basically doing the same thing. It was an easy finish for him, but he wouldn't have been able to score it had he not been in the box to tap it in. It did make me laugh, him grabbing the badge in his celebration. And I know that Fergie said in his interview after the window closed about him apparently saying he wants to stay and help us fight relegation. I mean, hats off to him for recognising that we are fighting relegation, because unfortunately, McAntony still can't say that word. But I'll be honest, I don't believe him. I think if he loved the club that much, he would have signed a new deal, even with like a release clause of 2 million, just so we got something in for him. But I'm definitely happy. I'm sure I speak for most Posh fans, where we know he's going in the summer. We know we're not going to get any money for him. Let's just get the best out of him between now and the end of the season. And I think Wednesday night's performance was definitely a step in the right direction there.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Lods. And I think sort of the point I want to make is that Wednesday night showed to me how important the midfield can be for us this season. I feel like if Hector plays at the level he played on Wednesday night and the level that he's shown to be capable of, and Archie Collins gets back to the level, we will be perfectly fine this season, because I think both of them can contribute with a goal. Obviously, Hector contributed with a goal at one Wednesday night, and both of them are good for that. And then it will hopefully lead to us becoming a bit more of a possession-based team, a bit more front-footed, which would be nice to see as well. I don't know if I'm necessarily with you, Lods, on the whole grabbing the badge thing and should he sign a new contract. I think Hector Kyprianou, no matter what you say, has been a good servant to the football club. He wasn't a massively expensive signing. And even if he does leave on a free this summer, it's definitely one that, you know, 250K or whatever it was for the sort of the 3 years that we've got out of him was definitely a worthwhile fee to pay. I think, you know, him signing a new deal would be risky for him, because, you know, you don't know whether the clubs are still going to come in. You don't know whether they'll meet Darren McAntony's asking price. You know, he always says that he lets players go, but we don't know that for a fact. And tying himself down to a new deal could be risky for Kyprianou. And it also gives him less choice about his own career. So I think if Hector Kyprianou can carry on putting in performances like he did on Wednesday night and can get us through to the end of the season and sort of be a bit more of a captain, you know, I called him Hector the Deflector. Let's get rid of that and let's be, you know, an encouraging presence. But if he can do that, then he'll leave on a free in the summer with my best wishes and looking back on his time as a Posh player very positively.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I sort of wanted to discuss, which was actually after the Cheltenham game, is Fergie's comments and sort of how concerning they were, that he felt like players were lacking in confidence. I actually think that he probably is the one that needs to take the blame for that. Let's assume that he's maybe talking about Nevitt, maybe talking about O'Brien Brady, because O'Brien Brady was good at the start of the season and now he looks really poor. Nevitt looked like an absolute clown on Wednesday night for the first Cheltenham goal. That guy absolutely skinned him. And obviously, O'Brien Brady was the one that gave the ball away. In that, I think that he needs to take the blame for that. Like we discussed after Bristol Rovers, that Nevitt was such a clear half-time substitution and they left him on for another 35 minutes of the game. Why are we playing these players in formations that ultimately they're not comfortable in and not confident in? When you think back to Dornelli before Christmas, I think it was, obviously Adam, when we did the Transfer Deadline Day Live, mentioned it, didn't he? And said that Archie Collins was the only one to go over him when he made a mistake, is that all of these things come back to the fact that we are overplaying these young players. And it is concerning because I don't really know how we get away from not playing them, because is there anyone better in the building as such? Like, O'Brien Brady and De Havilland look like they're probably about par, about level. Oscar Wallen's not shown fantastic levels. So out of the 4 or 5 centre-backs that we've got, obviously Katonga is out for the next 6 weeks or so, 2 months. What's the right answer? We need to protect these players. Like I've mentioned on Dornelli before, is that he's played more minutes now in his first proper season than either Ricky J. Jones or Harrison Burrows has. But where does the protection come from? We're in an absolute dogfight. I'm so concerned about what we're going to do to these players' careers and actually sort of the money that we will make on them in the future, because people are just going to have this long-lasting effect of, well, look how shit they were in that 24-25 season for Posh.
Well, it leads us on nicely to the sort of next topic, which we wanted to discuss on this episode, and that is the direction of Posh, the strategy. Obviously, Posh operate on a very much, I would say, almost a different strategy to every other club in the Football League, in the sense that we basically don't sign any players over 23 unless we're in a relegation fight. It's very clear that we try and buy young. We try and sell them on high. It's been successful to an extent in Darren McAntony's time here, but this season obviously has caused into question some of the flaws in the method, I would say. And we're obviously in a situation now where key players are now out of contract or have left on free contracts. It's very hard to remember the last time a key player actually signed a new deal at Peterborough United. So we want to talk about basically the overarching strategy and multiple points along that, and whether it's the right thing or whether we think that actually to get us out of this in future, if we do survive, even if we don't survive, we need to change plans and directions at the top. I'm going to start with Max. What are your feelings on Posh's aims, strategies, ambitions? I know it's a broad question, but I'd love to get your feelings on all of those sort of things.
Yeah, I think their strategy, I think our strategy is interesting. I mean, if you look, I think we had probably one of the highest of last season of the strategy, where you saw all these players we bought young and talent and, you know, talentful, and we've signed them, and then this season, you know, we've let them all go, sold a lot for big money. A lot of them want to, you know, I don't know whether they're playing for a move, who knows, but you know, it's almost like the finish of last season and getting to the playoffs and you know, even the goal against Oxford, you know, you thought, wow, like this team is so good. A lot of teams last season said that they were the best team that they saw last season come to their place, or we were the team that are most afraid of coming to this season. Everybody wants to play us. And we're viewed as an easy 3 points a lot of the time. And that stark contrast is something that the transfer policy, I think, is probably to blame for. Look, we have for 4.25 million or whatever. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have sold the players like Ephraim Mason-Clark, but I never have a problem with older heads in a camp. I never have a problem with that. When after the Sheffield Wednesday loss, we had a spaces with Darren McAntony on, and I asked him a question. Then I said, like, why are we flash sailing all of the older players and buying young if the younger players don't have anybody to look up to or learn from? And I think that's a sort of like a key thing that I'd like to see implemented more. You know, last season we had players like Johnson Clark Harris who helped the forward players and was, you know, a captain, whether or not he wasn't the official club captain at that point, but he was the captain a lot of the time and had that mentality. This season we've got none of that. We don't have somebody with that mentality. We don't have somebody of that age, of that experience, and we've had to panic buy in January to experience in. And yeah, it might have made us look better at the back, but we shouldn't have ever been in this place in the first place, for me, never. With the squad that we had last season, you know, we had probably the best manager in the league and some of the best players in the league. This season, we look awful, like miles off it. We just look terrible. And I just can't put my finger on where it went wrong. Well, I can put my finger on where it went wrong, actually, and that was in the summer. You know, we were talking about George Nevitt then. We signed him from Rochdale. Yeah, he's a fantastic player. Looks like a great talent. But you know, when we're sort of challenging for playoffs or whatever, I don't really know what we're trying to get out of that, especially with the lack of sort of experience in the dressing room.
I actually completely disagree with the transfers that we had in the summer. I do think that they will hopefully become good footballers. But as we always do, and I've said this to friends, I've said this to other supporters, I've said this to plenty of people, we always go through a phase where, let's say it's a three-year phase, we bring a player in, they understand how we play. The second year, they're in and out. And then the third year, that's where they are good, and then we sell them on. Let's say that this third year is the third year for, it was Joel Randall, it was Kyprianou, it was Ricky J. Jones, it is Malik Mothersill, even though he's a second year, it is Archie Collins. Those five players haven't been good enough this season, and they are to blame for the fact that the other players are being exposed, in my opinion. And actually, like we said, or like I said, all of those players that have had to play too much. Same with Otto, in a sense. Same with Kean Hayes as well. Neither of those two players were expecting to probably have played as much as they had. And I don't think that we can... I know that it seems like a little bit of a cop-out, but I don't think that we can blame the players that have come in for the ones that are meant to be our experienced players. Yes, they're not age experienced, but they've all played plenty of games. Archie Collins is over 100 games, isn't he? Kyprianou must be over 100 games now. That is our experience. They're the ones to blame for me.
So just sort of like a question, so I can understand, because there is parts of your point that I agree with, especially in the terms of the, you know, the people that understand our system, understand how you play, haven't been good enough. But when you get to the summer window, we finished the way that we did last season, losing to Oxford, you know, missing out on Wembley when we probably shouldn't have with that squad. Do you think signing players like you know, risks really in Chris Clark and George Nevet and players like Otto and Kean Hayes, do you think that's a sign of any sort of ambition? Because I don't think that's a sign of any sort of ambition at all, the players that we brought in. I know that's been the policy, and that's probably the same as people thought when we signed Ronnie Edwards and when we signed Ephraim Mason Clark, you know, why are we signing these players from these teams? But I can't understand where the ambition lies when we've had such a great finish and we've flash sold our best players. Like, we've been asset stripped really of our best players, a lot of them, and we've signed mediocrity in their place, and now we're sort of falling apart. And yes, the more experienced players, Ash, I completely agree with you, they haven't been good enough this season. I think losing Pocket to injury was really unfortunate as well, because he's probably the only one of that end of contract sort of group that has really put, you know, played for the badge and played in a way. But when they all go, what are we left with?
I think all of the signings we made last summer were policy signings, apart from probably Oscar Volin. Obviously, we dipped our toe going abroad, but I wouldn't say he looks out of place in our squad. He's still young, he's still learning, and he's showing some positive signs that he will become a good defender. I think I can narrow our window down last summer to two mistakes, possibly three. And that's without obviously taking into consideration hindsight. I think Sam Curtis was a stupid signing. I think we needed a more experienced right back, especially with Dornelli still learning. We want him to be first choice at some point, right? Sam Curtis wasn't the one for him to learn off of. And then the centre-backs, we had four centre-backs, Nevitt, Katongo, Volin and Fernandez. I think we all thought that Katongo was going to be a capable centre-back this season when we signed him. I don't think anyone said that he was going to be a terrible signing for us. But I think most of us knew that his partner was going to be a bit of a not sure, especially given how good Ronnie and Knight were last season. I think that those two mistakes, not signing a better centre-back and choosing one of them three to be capable of playing first-team football this season, and obviously not getting a good enough right-back. If you look at the rest of them on 11 on paper, going back to August, I think that's a good enough 11 to compete. I think the only other mistake you might be able to say we made was perhaps, given that we didn't get promoted with last season's squad, and this squad isn't as good as last season, it was going to always be a struggle to replicate exactly what we lost. But saying that we were going to finish top two, or at least we were going for top two, especially with Birmingham in the league, I think it was perhaps a mistake, suggesting that the players that we do have, players like Mothersill on the left wing, Jones wasn't great last season, and we put a lot of trust in Randall this season. These are all okay players for top six on their day, but I don't think any of them were going to get us top two.
We thought we could get even younger and even cheaper. I don't buy into this. We fucking second richest, or spent the second most amount of money, whatever. And then, so what we've done is we've gone even younger, but we've also been hindered with injuries. Nobody thought we was going to have so many injuries. We did. As you said about Katongo, we said about Katongo going in there. We didn't think he was going to get injured. And perhaps with one inexperienced person alongside somebody half decent, we could have been better, but we've actually been playing with two. Fernandez started off quite well and he sort of dropped off and he's come back up. You know, we didn't think that Sparks was going to be that shit. It was quite, on paper, as we said, he was a really good signing, but it didn't work for him whatsoever. You know, you wouldn't have thought a fucking championship winning left back to come in to us would be as shit as what he ended up being. You just wouldn't have thought it. And then all of these youngsters have all got potential. They will all be pretty good, but they've played far too much this season. Maybe next season is when we'll see the best of them. I think all we've got to do this year is just get by the best we can and see where we go from there. So not necessarily the worst policy, but we have been unfortunate, and a lot of that is down to injuries and where we are and some of the performances of the players. We've already said about Collins and, you know, Hector, they've not been at their best. Started to get a bit better in the last few weeks, but I think it's just been a fucking fucked up season, whatever way you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's important to note here is when we were first sort of sold the new sort of young and hungry model after the Sheffield Wednesday game, we were told that it was a 3-year project. That was very clear. First year is going to be sort of retooling. Second year, get a bit better. And then third year, we really have a go. And I think in a way, the first year being so successful and quite unexpectedly successful, I don't think anyone thought at the start of last season that we'd have the season we did. In a way, that sort of messed things up because we didn't expect to be selling as many assets as we did last summer, because we didn't expect as many of them to have breakout seasons as they did. And so it sort of reset that timer back to zero almost on the young and hungry policy, and we started from a weaker position. So I think we have to sort of we have to readjust our aims. But the truth is that this summer is probably the biggest summer of recruitment that we'll have in years and years, even bigger than I think the summer when we went back up to the Championship, because we have to replace. We still haven't really replaced Ephraim Mason-Clarke, and we have to replace Kipriano, we have to replace Poku, maybe we have to replace Ricky if Lindgren doesn't turn out to be the player we think he is. But I think we can do it. I think people that have lost faith in the recruitment that is notoriously good. I mean, you look up and down the EFL and you look at like other content creators and other podcasts, they all think that, you know, we are what's still one of the best recruiting teams, and they think we've just got it wrong this season. And I think that is, we're sort of overanalyzing it in a sense. We had a bad summer, but I still have faith in the recruitment policy. And I still think that, you know, if we spend, we're going to have to spend serious money. I mean, the transfer market completely crashing last summer didn't help us either. We'll have to spend some serious money. Hopefully it will be a more active transfer market and there'll be some better young talent for us to buy. But I think losing faith in a policy after one season, how are you ever going to build a successful project if that's the way you do it? And yeah, as Lod said, and I think Ash said as well, there is a lot of upside to a lot of the players we signed, and we're just going to have to wait.
I think I'm largely with you, Charlie, in the sense that I think Posh's recruitment is definitely their strength. We have an enviable record that is almost the envy of the entirety of the Football League. But I do think that we're at a stage now where we do need to make some tweaks about it. And it is a question of how much do you want promotion, Dara, almost? I actually feel like that is a fair question to ask at this point, because I look back over the last decade and we've had one promotion during that time. When Posh were very good, we still signed young players, and that's what makes it difficult when Dara comes on the pod and says, well, wouldn't you have signed Con Clark? Wouldn't you have signed George Nevitt? Yeah, I probably would have done. I probably would have got one of the outstanding players from non-league. I probably would have got an 18-year-old centre-back that's playing in non-league. And we can see with them there are flashes of quality that you want to buy. But Posh were in an awkward situation, right? Because we lost an almost unprecedented amount of talent from our team in one summer. And replacing them was going to be very difficult. But what we did is replace them all with project players. And that has been completely exposed now because a lot of these players are just not ready for League One, let alone top of League One level. And that's been the biggest issue. And I look back at the successful Posh teams and they've all had a core of experienced players. For instance, Grant McCann, very, very experienced, even in the Championship. We went and signed him when we were in League One at the time. You look back beyond that, Dean Keats, Chris Westwood, huge signings for Posh. Gabby Zakwani, massive player for Posh, all had experience at higher levels. All players that we're not signing that sort of type of player anymore. And what we are doing now is sort of bringing them in January when we're panicking and we're saying, oh, we need some experience, but we're not bringing in, I know it sounds harsh, but the right experience, because Sam Hughes isn't a standout player in League One. Even go back to last season, Archie Collins was a good example of a player that's played 100 games in League One. We signed him from Exeter. He was a key player for that season, right? I think there has to be a tweak to the policy where, yeah, we do go and take these punts on the lower league because that is what we're very, very good at. We are good at finding and unearthing talent, but we need to supplement them with some quality players and some proven players at this one and some signings that scream ambition. Because ultimately, what we signed in the summer, when you look back on it now, if a League Two team had done that, I don't think you'd be going, wow, that's completely out of the question that they all could have gone to a League Two team. They just haven't worked out this season, and whether they will in future, I don't know. But I do think at this point we need to question how much Dara wants it, and how much, whether it's a question of, is this policy or is this a lack of ambition now? Is that why we're going down this route? And the other thing I think we need to stop doing is Barry Fry readily admits, he says to players in their first meeting, I'm going to make you a millionaire. Okay, you might do, but I want them to play for Peterborough. I don't want their first thing when they sign to think, well, what Championship club or what Premier League team am I going to go to? Because what I think it does is it creates a situation where players like Archie Collins have dropped off this season. Is that because he thinks, well, I should have had my move by now? Players like Kyprianou actively wanted a move. I mean, the club are denying it now, but I think we can see from the start of the season his performances that he has done. And I think these sort of key players that are getting linked with moves have promised it from the start that almost by the third season here, they don't want to be here anymore. And actually, I think we need to start saying, look, you can achieve your ambitions with Posh. You can become a Championship player with Posh. We're always at the top of League One. Why can't you sustain yourself in the Championship with Peterborough United? And I know we're a million miles away from that now, but that needs to be the promise. Not that we're going to make them millionaires, that they can become a Championship footballer with Peterborough. And then if you are at sell, you might get your move. But let's not mention it in the first meeting, because that shouldn't be the ultimate aim, to get there to make these players millionaires. The ultimate aim should be to get Peterborough to the Championship. And that is what needs to come to the forefront of our mind from now, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't want to misquote, but I remember back to last summer when we lost Josh Knight on a free and obviously lost Clark Harris on a free. And I'm concerned that I'm sure that DMAC said that we were going to not make these mistakes again. And yet here we are, knowing that we go into a summer now where we're basically going to lose three players that probably would have made us anywhere from £6 to £10 million, I would imagine, between them. And it just feels like we haven't learned from our mistakes. We don't get the players to sign the contracts early enough. And then ultimately, Ricky J. Jones, Hector Kyprianou and Kwame Poku have got us by the balls. They don't need to play. We maybe wanted to try and offload them, or they decided that they wanted to stay. But at the end of the day, they don't need to push for a move, because now they're going to just swan off into the sunset at the end of the season. We are not going to make any money. And they can go to the next club and go, right, I'm going to sit tight at Peterborough for 6 months. You can pay me a massive signing on bonus. And then when I think about losing those three players plus a couple of extras, if we survive this season, crikey, I think we're absolutely doomed next season, knowing that those three have gone. It's like a really dangerous position to feel in, and actually quite a concerning one, because if you lose those three, maybe four or five, when you take a few more out, well, I just don't see where the progression comes from, unfortunately.
We used to have a policy, didn't we, where players would be transfer listed once they were going into their final year. And I don't know when, but we just stopped doing it. And we've not addressed it. McAntony's not come out and said we've changed our policy. I first noticed it with Joe Ward. When we released our retained list, he had his own little section at the bottom of the page which said contract offered. And I think most people knew that Joe Ward wasn't going to sign that new contract. And since then, I don't think we listed Dembele either, actually, thinking about it. And he was in his final year. And then we didn't list Josh Knight. These are players that have a value a year before their contract expires that I think we should be looking to sell. If we know they're not going to sign a new deal, this is money we're essentially wasting. We all know we're a selling club. I don't think, yeah, there might be the odd exception. I know he came out and said Kyprianou would have been impossible to replace last summer. Fine, you might be able to get away with that if you really are going for promotion. But surely if a club's bidding X amount of money, we should be looking to cash in, regardless of who they are, what value they hold to us. I think we've lost out on a lot of money with obviously Josh Knight. Clark Harris, we obviously tried to sell, so I wouldn't throw him into the mix. We're going to lose money on Poku. We're going to lose money on Kyprianou, Ricky J. Jones. There's so many examples now we're just throwing this money away. Even like Burrows, Edwards and Mason Clark, I think we probably could have got more money on had we sold them at the right time. And I think going back to the contract thing, I think half of our issue is we offer these longish contracts. Take Kwame Poku, for example. We signed him when we were in the Championship. I don't think we were planning on playing him in the first team in the Championship. So he was essentially a bench player, or he was learning. He was on a four-year deal. He weren't exactly great in League Two either. I think he had one assist in 33 games and zero goals the season before we signed him. I don't think we've offered him another contract since then, have we? So he's broke into the first team after basically being a bang average League Two winger and not got a single pay rise. And he's had his breakthrough season now where, had he had 3 years left on his deal, he's probably worth 5 or 6 million. But we're going to throw that away now because we're refusing to give out the contracts when these players join, have their breakthroughs and come into the first team. And like you said, John, they've already been promised they're going to get a big move. Why would they sign to stay for another few years once they've already had their breakthrough season?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And you know, that's probably a big reason why we're seeing some of the players now that know they're going in the summer, just maybe not showing up like they did last season when they had a year left. I think that's a big upset, especially in the predicament that we find ourselves in. And, you know, I think we've discussed in great depth, you know, looking back and seeing, you know, where it went wrong. Looking forward now, for me, and I you know, if you told me in March or even, you know, the end of last season that next season we'd be in this position at this time, you know, I would have laughed at you. I wouldn't have believed you, considering where we were last season. I wouldn't think it would ever go downhill this quickly. And you know, it was only a few months ago where Charlie and I sat here and said, you know, there is a chance that the playoffs are still on and hopefully that this team will click. And I've been saying all season this team will click, and it hasn't. And I don't think it's going to click now. I think it's going to be a real dogfight to the end. And my expectations on the floor. However, my optimism for next season, however, is something that won't go away. It's just whichever league we're in, whether we get relegated or whether we stay up, I think the summer is going to be a massive hit or miss. And Charlie, you know, mentioned it earlier. It's a massive hit or miss onto our season. This our group of players as a whole, with the loss of some of our good, better players at the end of this season, is something that's going to leave a lot to be desired. We need to spend big. And that's all I want to see. It's some ambition. Whether we have to change the policy, whether we stick with what we've got, I just don't want to see us make the same mistakes and make unambitious signings towards next season. Because, you know, there is possibly a chance that we could be fighting for promotion again. There is probably a chance, you know, that if we do go down, we're going to have to get ourselves out of League Two. You know, I don't want to see us make these mediocre signings that we probably have made this season. And yes, they probably will become really good players, but it wasn't the right time to be signing players that have the potential to become great players. when we were in a position of fighting for playoffs and fighting for automatic promotion?
I think alarmingly for me, we talk a lot about, oh, this is a massive transfer window, for instance, and certainly mid-season. And actually in the research to doing this episode, when we were sort of discussing this as a topic, I went back through and I looked at every January transfer window from 2020. And I'm literally just going to list you the sign-ins, and then I will point out three January transfer windows, which I think were particularly important that we messed up. The first one being 2020 to 21. Didn't make any signings. This is via Transfer Market, by the way, the website. So if there is any errors, blame them, not me. 21 to 22 was our championship season when we got relegated. The list of players we signed then was Giando Fuchs, Jack Taylor, Hayden Coulson, Barley Mumba, Reece Brown, Stephen Bender, Callum Morton, and Kai Corbett. 22-23, Nathaniel Ogbetta, Will Norris, and Kabongo Chimanga came in. And then last year, we signed Mason Clark, back on loan, Ola Kigby, Jed Steer, and Daly Campbell. And then obviously this year we've got Johnston, Eden, Andrews, and Hughes. Now, when I look back through that list, I think there are probably three players that you could say were good signings. I would say Ogbetta, I would say Jack Taylor, and probably Jed Steer. I think even Mason Clark, when you think about getting him back on loan in every eventuality, wasn't a great signing. Now, the two transfer windows which I want to identify is the one in the championship where we went down. We were screaming out for quality. And what did we do? We signed four loanees. And when you look at them now, Hayden Coulson, Reece Brown, Stephen Bender, Callum Morton, what level are they playing at? Like, I don't even know, but nowhere near championship level. Didn't save ourselves then, didn't give ourselves a chance. Last season, we were screaming out for a right back, were we not? What did we sign? Ola Kigby, terrible player. Daly Campbell as a backup right back. And that decision probably cost us playing championship football this year. If we had got Peter Kyoso back, I think we would have gone up almost certainly. Instead, we signed Daly Campbell and back Jadel Katongo to do the job. And then you look at this season, the bottom 11 teams all made a signing on deadline day. We did not. Now, I know we needed urgent additions, and I completely understand that. But I think if you look back over that January, the mid-season transfers for the last 5 years, to have made three good signings in that entire time is pretty alarming to me. And that is something that needs to be addressed from the club down, because I think it shows a sign of either muddled recruitment, either lack of ambition, or either a lack of strategy that sort of gets lost in mid-season and then we go again in the summer. That January window should be about strengthening. And I think we've failed to do it on multiple occasions. And that has really, really hurt us on multiple seasons now. And it is becoming a concern for me that we are certainly not getting it right in January, let alone the summer.
Yeah, and even when I think back to obviously last January and bringing in Jed Steer again at the end of the transfer, like, we got rid of him and then we brought him back, and now we're in a position where he's not played since, when was it, like middle of November or maybe even middle of October. We were looking to offload him and then the window shuts and now he's straight back in the team and he'll play for us probably for the next couple of months or so. Is that it just seems confusing that we want to get rid of players, we want to sell them on, but then as soon as they stay, all of a sudden they're straight back into the team. We're then sacrificing the development of the players that have got the long-term contracts. It's just concerning that, like I said, I don't have an issue with Jed Steer coming back in. I think that now definitely is that time where you do need that experience, but equally at what detriment is that to Bilicapic and potentially Will Blackmore, should he deserve a start ever for Peterborough United?
All right, well, that's that just dissected. We're going to move on to Charlton now. Charlton, we play on Tuesday night, which is 2 days on from when we record this. It's another away game in League One, which normally spells defeat. I think, Ash, you touched on the Steer situation at the minute. I think that's probably worth discussing. I think there is a genuine debate around our goalkeepers for that match. Is there any other changes that we'd like to see? And indeed, do you want Jed steering? I'm going to go to Ashley first. Talk us through your team lineup.
Do you know what? This is an interesting one because there was a clip that went round of Burton and a goal that they scored, obviously against Blackpool at the weekend. And it was the big lad that was at Wrexham that is now at Burton. He flicked a ball on and then their fast striker runs through and chips the ball over the goal. And there's been some comments of, well, we don't have the players to do that. But I think that we do. I think that Wednesday night, showed that we need to stick to a formation that really utilises the assets that we've got up front. And actually, this is a controversial one, I think, but I would like to see us play 4-2-4 with Malik on the left, Kean Hayes on the right, Brad Ehonvian up top, and then either of Ricky or Gustav, because I think that Brad wins those flick-ons. I think that he wins those balls and then Ricky runs through. Our captain has said that he wants to help us drag us out of this relegation scrap. So he needs to start and he needs to show it. I don't want to be screaming down the front of Charlton away end after another loss, but he needs to start showing it and dragging us forwards. And then I think that the back four probably picks itself in Johnston, Hughes, Wallin, I think, is the one that's got to play here. And then Teo are done. And then obviously Archie Collins. And then, like I said, yeah, I think that probably Steer is the one. Charlton are in a great run of form, aren't they? I think that it's probably time that we utilise Steer's experience and wise old head for at least the next month or so when we go on this horrid run of away games that I just don't see us getting anything from.
Yeah, so I think I'd go with a different approach to you, Ash. I was actually thinking somewhat the opposite, and I'd quite like us to pack the midfield against Charlton. I'd quite like to see Collins, Kiprianu and Sissoho all play together in sort of like a 4-3-3. I agree with you on the defence. I think Steer should go back in. I just think he's a cool head. And I do think, you know, Nevitt's been really poor. I don't trust Manny at all at the moment. Wallin probably is the safe pick at centre-back with Sam Hughes. I think the front three's an interesting one. I think I would go with Kean Hayes on the right wing. I think he's probably still our best right-sided player. I think he's got good potential. I think cutting in onto the left foot is something that we've missed. And I also think he's probably the player that has the best rapport with Carl Johnston out on that side. I think they have quite a good understanding, especially when they press together. So I'd go Kean Hayes. I'd go Gustav up top, even though I have been getting increasingly frustrated with Gustav. I think Bristol Rovers was probably that chance he missed, probably the peak of that frustration. I would give him a game. I think he's got a bit of class and a bit of quality that we might need on Tuesday night. And then I think I'd go Malik on the left wing because he's been very good off the bench. He's been, you know, a consistent performer. He's got the physicality for it. He's got the pace for a big pitch at Charlton. I don't think Ricky's massively effective at the moment. So that's the team that I'd go for. Obviously, the notable omissions from that are Chris Conn-Clarke, who for me seriously needs to work on himself. And then, obviously, Ricky's not in there. Ado, I don't think she'd even be anywhere near the squad. You know, I'm gutted that John didn't stick to his. If he touches another piece of grass, I'm Fergie out. That's quite disappointing. But I do think he should be nowhere near Tuesday night's game because Charlton are a tough team. It's a tough place to go. And, yeah, I think they've won, four of their last five in the league. Yeah, we could be in serious trouble on Tuesday night if we don't get this team selection right.
Chaz, I'll tell you what, after seeing the first half, I wasn't far off being Fergie out at Cheltenham. But what I would say is I still stand by that statement. If he plays a league game in a game that matters, I don't understand why you wouldn't put Kean Hayes over him. There is just no justification in my mind that Kean Hayes, Ricky Jade Jones, Malik Mothersill, I'd all rather them start down the right than Abraham Oddo for another game this season. So, yeah, Oddo is definitely getting dropped for me. I think I've made that quite clear. I think you both raise interesting lineups and very similar to sort of the dilemma that I have in my head because I want, like you say, Ash, Posh to play on the front foot, and I think the 4-2-4 is the way to do that. But then I am also conscious that that leaves us very exposed in the midfield, and you have a fairly big pitch at Charlton, a fairly energetic team with Nathan Jones, and I do worry that in transition we could just get murdered. The other thing I thought about was playing that 4-3-3 that you suggested, Charlie, but then we're also playing another new system, which I'm not a huge fan of. It feels like we're changing formation almost every game. I think I'm at a point where I would play the 4-2-3-1 again and get back to playing Posh football. I've been saying it for weeks now. I think that is our best team, our best system, our best form, and it wasn't great, came in the first 10 games of the season when we were doing basically exactly what we were doing last season, slightly less effectively. If we get back to that run of form that we showed over the first 10 games, we'll stay up because we were safely mid-table for a lot of the early part of the season before things have gone really bad. And I think that's when we've started getting muddled with it. So that's where I'd go. At the back, unsurprisingly for anyone that's listened to this podcast, I wouldn't pick Koscar Vallin. I thought he struggled again first half against Cheltenham, nearly gave up a goal there. I would play Manny Fernandez with Sam Hughes. Hughes is another one that I'm not particularly keen on playing at the minute because I just don't think he can build up. But I think he is probably our safest choice in a game where we're going to be on the back foot for a lot of it. Johnston comes in at right back and Eden starts left back. Kipriano and Collins are going to be key players for the rest of the season. I think they've got to start. They've got to form that partnership again and get back to the form they showed. I think really for me, Motherseal's the left winger. Hayes would be the right winger. The biggest question is probably who to play at 10. I'm not sure Con Clark's done enough. I'm not sure I want an isolated Lindgren in a 4-3-3 because he can get muscled out of where the ball a lot. So I would be tempted to start with Ricky up top and Lindgren sort of slightly playing off him, almost like the running 10, like we used to describe Sammy Smodic, something like that, and play it in that way. I know it's not his most familiar position, but I do think Lindgren, when he gets space, links to play relatively well. It's when he's back to goal and he's got a defender right next to him that he seems to struggle to hold it up. So I think that's where I'm at with it at the minute. Unfortunately, I find it very difficult to find a system that I think is going to be capable of beating Charlton. I think the key for us, whatever formation we play, is to match them physically, match them in aggression, match them in structure, all of which we've been found wanting in recently. And I'm not convinced that's going to change here, to be honest.
I've been extremely disappointed in Lindgren since he's come. And I think it's something that I am really disappointed in. And John sort of just touched on it there, but sort of in more depth for me, I don't think I've seen him play where he hasn't been muscled out of a game by a centre-back partnership or about three. His runs, albeit creative, he still manages to get beat to the ball by the centre-backs. And that to me means that it is an impossibility at this stage of the season to play him as an isolated forward. It's not something I'd want to risk because if he gets man-marked out of a game, we're going to struggle to score goals. If we don't score, we don't win. So I think it'd just be silly to play him as an isolated forward. I like John's idea, however, of playing him as that sort of like running 10 and playing in behind Ricky. But I think I like Ash's 11 more. I would have Bradley and Ricky together. I would play on the front foot. We would leave ourselves open to counter-attack and we probably would leave ourselves slightly open to being muscled in midfield. But, you know, we've mentioned all podcast about Kipriano and him wanting to drag this club out of the pit it's sort of got itself into. You know, we preached last season, or I did, that we probably had the best midfield during the league last season. And I still think that the quality of these two players are right up there in terms of midfield partnerships. If there's any midfield duo that can pull off sort of matching Charlton's ability in the midfield, I'd put my money on these two players. So I'm happy to run that risk and hopefully that their words stay true and they're both of them are going to put on a performance that I could be proud to watch.
So I'm just going to keep it really simple and go for a 4-1-2-1-2 or is it a 4-3-3? Whatever. Obviously not the 4-4-2, which we all know that I like. So my selection, I would go back to Bilicapic in goal. Why not? Fuck Steer, he can fuck off. I'll have Hughes and Wallin in the middle. Bollocks to him. He can't be fucking bothered to do a podcast. He can't be bothered to play. Anyway, move on. Eden, I'll have left back. Obviously, Johnson at the right back. In midfield, I'll have Kipriano, Collins, and Mohamed Sosoho, whatever his name is. And then sort of like a front three of Conclark, Mothersill, and either Lindgren or what's his name? Not Ricky. Bradley, Ivanhoe. That's it, either him. So pretty much a 4-3-3 or even potentially like the diamond, but nothing spectacular. Let's go and see what we can do. Let's not overcomplicate it. It's not a complicated game, is it?
Well, Posh have made it look complicated on quite a few occasions this season, Dale. We're going to go to predictions. Ash, I'm going to go to you first.
Right. I'll tell you what. I'm going blind confidence now. We've got to start. We've got to start picking up results. And I think Tuesday is going to be the night, isn't it? 4-1, Posh. No clean sheet. Third leg, Brad is going to get a hat trick. And then Sam Hughes is going to get his first goal for the club in a scrappy away end winner. And then that's it. Yeah. I'm blind confidence.
No blind confidence from me. No confidence at all from me. Charlton are a side that don't concede many goals. They are in very good form. I don't see us scoring. I do see them scoring. I think it can't be as bad as Lincoln and Bristol Rovers, surely. But then I keep saying it can't get any worse, and it does get worse. So I think we're going to lose 2-0. I just don't see any way that we get some points out of this game. I remember going there last season and really enjoyed that game. Really, really enjoyed it, actually. I thought we played great on the day. I think this could be another stark reminder of just how far we've fallen, I'm afraid.
So I'm going to be optimistic as usual. Usual fucking hell. I predict we're going to win 4-2. But if I'm honest, I'm actually going to be happy to take a draw. Recently, a good family friend passed away. He's a massive Charlton fan. I'm going to his funeral next week. I'll take a draw if he's looking down, just for him. But 4-2, fuck it, 4-2.
I was going to go for a 4-2 win. Now what am I supposed to go for? I'll go for 5-2, fuck it. I think now the window's shut, I think Ricky J. Jones is going to be back to his best. I think Kipriano is going to be back to his best. And I think the handbrake will be off. And Posh will be back, and this will be the start of something new.
Yeah, listen, Charlton are a club that they're not great at keeping form together. They're a club that really struggle in League One, actually, to put together really good runs of form, and they're on one now. I reckon we're going to end it. It's just the kind of game that if I was a Charlton fan, I'd be absolutely terrified for, because it's got banana skin all over it. I reckon we'll go there and it'll be a smash and grab and we'll win 2-1.
I've been saying all episode that I've been too negative and I was going to come and predict a 1-0 win, you know, thinking it was sort of like a hot take. And here we all are predicting like massive batterings. I don't know which club we've sort of been watching in the last few weeks, but I am going to predict a win, and I'm going to predict a 2-1 Posh win because I've changed my mind. We are going to score 2 and hopefully we'll win. But you know, John's dead. It can't get worse. Into that, I say it can.
Yeah, look, just for those that don't watch us on YouTube, John is currently absolutely seething. A bit like me at about 20-5 on Saturday, where like Burton were winning, Crawley were winning, Shrewsbury were winning, and Cambridge were drawing. That was a really, really bleak time, and I was all aboard the relegation bus with those lot picking up points. But they've all had good runs. I feel like Peterborough United are yet to have a good run this season. And Mr. Ferguson loves February to May. Now's the time to kick on. Cheltenham was the first one. Bring it on, lads. I'm confident that you can turn it around.
I feel like every time we record one of these episodes, it's like the rest of my crew here just have like memory loss. It's like someone's vanished their memory of all that's come before them for this whole season. And then they're like, yeah, we're going to win. Charlie even said, Charlton should be terrified. If their scouts have done any watching of our last two away games, I'm telling you, they ain't fucking terrified, Charlie. They'll be laughing their way to 3 points. But I pray you five are right and somehow things are going to get better, because all I see is bleakness at the minute. Del, you want to go?
Yeah, but the thing is, the reason we're being so fucking optimistic with our results is because, you know, it's like, when we was up the top last season, we was up there, when the teams down the bottom of the table come to us, we used to shit ourselves, you know? And they would fucking win or they'd get a point. The roles are reversed. We are now that shit team at the bottom. We're going to an away game to a high-flying team. They'll be shit. I'll get what Charlie said. They'll be shit themselves for that banana skin. So, yeah, we are going to fucking batter them because we are Peterborough United and we are fifth from bottom. We are fifth, aren't we? Yeah. So anyway, so that's why I think we should all be positive, because we are the underdogs now. We're not the fucking top dogs. We're the underdogs in a relegation battle, and we need to be fighting for every fucking point, every goal. So, yeah, fucking right. We are going to win, and they are going to shit themselves. Fuck off, Charlton.
Well, we've been the underdogs for weeks now, Dale, and nothing's really changed. But I really do hope that we are Charlton Athletic, Carlisle United, and we go there and our centre-half scores a hat-trick. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Bradley's on fire. Your defense is terrified. Bradley's on fire.